Invited Guests, a Good Omens botfic, written by Entangled Now and read by Job. Chapter 3. The Sleeping Beauty Problem. It hasn't been a good day. A combination of tiredness and eye strain have left Aziraphale unable to enjoy either a book or a documentary he'd been saving about the new discoveries at Pompeii. Instead, he's left drinking too many cups of tea, the main lights turned off, in favor of small lamps dotted around the flat. He's not sure if it's helping. There's also an ache in his shoulder that's made reaching and turning his head difficult without discomfort. He's not sure if that's tension or something he'd pulled rearranging one of his bookshelves last night when sleep proved too elusive. He can't help but be reminded that he was nearing 50, and he couldn't hope to function happily forever on 2 or 3 hours sleep a night, sometimes less. Eventually the rent, as they say, would come due. He's trying to be sensible, resting as much as he could, plenty of fluid, no bright lights and no distractions. He knows his mood well enough by now not to let himself hope too optimistically for a nap, but the pretense of one has sometimes helped him in the past. It's quite enough that he hears the faint click of his front door, then the not half as faint creak of it being nudged open. He can't help but feel a moment of relief at the idea of a break from a lonely and rather depressing contemplation of his own mortality. Then immediately feels very silly, because Crowley isn't coming to visit him of his own free will, and there will be no conversation, or smiles, or glasses of wine shared between friends. All things that Aziraphale hasn't exactly found himself enjoying in abundance for the last few years. He sighs and sets down his tea, rising from his chair to retrieve his neighbor. The first thing he sees is the disarray of Crowley's red hair above the long, fragile-looking length of his neck, then the subtle shape of his shoulder blades beneath a tightly fitted black t-shirt. It's bunched a little beneath the arms and creased from sleep, exposing a slice of pale hips and the base of his spine, both of which Aziraphale tells himself sharply to stop admiring. The pyjama trousers are familiar, a deep burgundy that's almost black in the low light, leading down to Crowley's bare feet. There's half a bloody footprint on Aziraphale's carpet, another between the living room and the kitchen, and then two more by his front door.
Oh, good heavens, Crowley! What did you do to your poor foot?
He hurries to catch Crowley's arm before he can sway his way deeper into the flat, his strange yellow-brown eyes only half open. The red smears aren't excessive, but they are worrying enough that Aziraphale doesn't think he should be walking around on whatever he's done to himself. He turns the other man as quickly as he dares, and then urges him back out the way he'd come. When he's awake, Crowley has an oddly swaying walk, as if he's always on the verge of tipping over and needs to attract as much attention as possible in the hope that someone will provide assistance. Aziraphale had actually assumed it was affected the first time he saw him, so he'd been very surprised to discover that his gait while asleep was just a softer, more easy version of it. A gentle sort of side-to-side motion, which seems almost designed to encourage someone guiding him to reach down and hold his hips. Aziraphale is going to do nothing of the sort.
I think I'm going to have to wake you up today, he tells him instead. You will want
to have a look at that. Maybe put something on it. Perhaps he'd trodden on something sharp in the hall. Aziraphale pockets his keys and pulls his front door shut, then herds Crowley across the hall, where there are two more footprints, but no sharp objects to be seen, which raises the worrying possibility that it might still be in his foot. He leads the sleeping man into his flat to find more prints, the red of them sharper and wetter, across his wooden floor, and then more heading out of the darkness of his bedroom. Aziraphale gives Crowley a reassuring pat and leaves him briefly to pop his head in. He spies the culprit immediately. There's a smashed mug on the floor, a pool of cold brown liquid around it, which he would have guessed instinctively was coffee, since Crowley seems to drink the stuff like water. But it appears to actually be tea instead.
Oh! You had a bit of an accident on the way out of bed, didn't you? Stay there for a moment.
He leaves Crowley swaying and shuffling while he puts the small lamp on and picks up the shattered pieces of mug that appeared out in an arc, suggesting Crowley had knocked it rather forcefully to the floor. He carefully stacks them and sets them on the cabinet by the bed, being aware of sharp edges. Then he nips into the bathroom for some paper to wipe the cold spill up with. He deals with the footprints as well, so neither of them are in danger of tracking through them.
I'm sorry, but you can't go wading through this on the way to bed.
He tosses the paper in the bin in the corner of the room, and then encourages Crowley to sit down on the disheveled bedding. They say that you should try and wake someone who's sleepwalking in a familiar environment. Somewhere they feel safe, so they don't have to deal with too much of a shock. Though, to be honest, Aziraphale's not entirely sure how to go about it. Crowley has already proven himself somewhat immune to loud noises in this state. A gentle shaking seems the best place to start. He curls one hand around Crowley's upper arm, the other over his shoulder, and gives a careful squeezing shake.
Crowley?
There's no reaction, but a slow rock of movement, the breathing still slow and steady. He tries it again, this time a touch harder. It would be very easy to press his other hand to the, no doubt, warm plane of Crowley's jaw, to gently urge him into consciousness. But Aziraphale is very aware that he's still invading the man's personal space, that his permission to be here is still rather nebulous and uncertain. He doesn't enjoy the thought of waking him at all, but it's necessary.
Anthony, please wake up. This is important.
Angel,
Crowley says, with the slow and broken rhythm of someone who might be stirring.
Please, wake up. You've cut your foot, and I don't know how bad it is. I'm going to need rather more of your cooperation than you're currently capable of.
Angel?
Crowley says again, but there's a raspy quality to the word that feels almost awake.
Almost there. A little more conscious for me, please,
Aziraphale encourages. Crowley's sleepy eyes drift and then focus on his hair, the previous softness of his mouth pulling itself into a confused frown. The rest of his face quickly follows. All at once, the man is awake, his narrow limbs not quite so soft, his eyes sharper without their customary sunglasses. The pale brown of his iris is almost a honey yellow, and Aziraphale realizes that he's never seen them from so close. He hurriedly draws his hand away from Crowley's arm, the muscle now flexing and alive beneath his fingers.
What are you? Why are you?
Ow!
Crowley winces, his left foot shifting on the floor.
Terribly sorry. There was a broken mug on your bedroom floor, and you were bleeding, Aziraphale explains. It seemed best to bring you back here and wake you up. I didn't want you to walk around on it too much without having a look for yourself.
Crowley lifts his foot, levering the thing upside down onto his lap like the man has no joints in his hip at all. The bottom has a ring of dried blood, almost to the heel, and there are two cuts beneath the toes, messy and coated with dirt, but thankfully they don't look too deep. Shit, Crowley says. Aziraphale gets the impression that the pain of the injury has awoken as well.
Can't believe I slept through that.
Do you have a first aid kit?
Crowley blinks at him, and Aziraphale takes a moment to wonder whether he's actually as awake as he seems. He has no experience with people coming out of a sleepwalking phase, but being roused from such a deep sleep is rarely pleasant. As if to confirm as much, Crowley pulls a long hand over his face, as if to nudge his brain into action.
Not much of one, but there's some Dettol and plasters and stuff in the bathroom cabinet. A bandage, maybe. There might be a support bandage, too.
Crowley doesn't sound certain, but Aziraphale decides to hope for the best.
Do you mind?
He asks. Crowley blinks again before it seems to register that Aziraphale is asking him for permission to retrieve it.
Yeah, sure. But you don't have to do that. Shit! Did I bleed all over your floor? I'm sorry.
Crowley's grimace looks horrified, and Aziraphale finds himself patting his knee like he's a small child, much to his horror. He makes himself stop.
Oh, don't worry about it. I just wanted to make sure you were all right. It was a bit of a shock, that's all.
Aziraphale rises and heads into the bathroom. Crowley's flat is a mirrored version of his own, so it's easy enough to find what he's looking for. There are no cotton pads or balls, so tissue will have to do.
You really don't have to do any of this. It was my own stupid fault.
Crowley's voice is still sleep rough, the smoky grate of it pleasant to listen to. Aziraphale sinks to his knees in front of him and gestures for permission. Crowley looks surprised before waving a go-ahead at him.
I'm the one that disturbed you in the middle of the night.
He takes a moment to look at the clock and winces.
Jesus, make that morning.
Oh, it's really no bother,
Aziraphale assures him.
I wasn't in the middle of anything. I'm rarely asleep myself, to be honest.
It occurs to him that Crowley may just be being polite. He looks at where he's already pulled the man's bare foot onto his thighs, long toes looking strangely vulnerable against his tan trousers.
Unless you'd rather I didn't. I understand that we don't actually know each other very well. I don't want to make you uncomfortable.
Crowley's face is unreadable for a moment, eyebrows lifted, mouth forming a word, and then seeming to change its mind halfway through. He shakes his head instead.
No, it's fine. I don't mind. It's just, well, it feels weird, you down there trying to fix it, since it's really my fault. I should have been more careful.
It was an accident,
Aziraphale reminds him, drawing the supplies he'd collected closer to his knees.
Well, two accidents, I suppose, both of which happened while you were asleep.
He's trying for reassuring, since Crowley clearly thinks he's putting Aziraphale to a great deal of trouble.
I'm happy to help, really. It's quite all right.
Crowley blinks slowly, expression surprised. His toes crunch gently against Aziraphale's thigh.
I'm going to get blood on your trousers,
he argues, though it seems something of a last-ditch effort. I'm more concerned with making sure that you're not badly hurt, Aziraphale tells him. He wraps a hand around Crowley's foot, which is a little cold from its nighttime journey, and it flexes in his grip, almost instinctively. The tendons stretch and the toes spread against the curve of his hand. He's struck all at once by how strangely intimate that is, holding another person's bare foot.
Sorry, it's dirty, I know.
Crowley's mouth pulls into a grimace when Aziraphale turns it to see better and reveals that the bottom is indeed a bit grubby. The hallway between their flats is something of a minefield of dirt, pet hair, and odd bits of fluff, all of which will need to be cleaned out of the wound.
Don't worry about that either. I'm more concerned about fixing you up right now.
You wouldn't believe what I've worked through over the years, Crowley mutters. I'd probably get your trousers dirty, even if I wasn't bleeding everywhere.
He pulls a face immediately after he says it, as if he hadn't wanted to draw more attention to exactly what he might be holding in his lap.
I don't suppose you have much choice in the matter, Aziraphale offers sympathetically, appending the bottle of Dettol onto a folded square of tissue.
He dabs the cuts to see how bad they are beneath the coating of dried blood, and whether he can spot anything still inside them. He's as careful as he can be, but Crowley still pulls a face when he disinfects the larger cut. He apologizes, then again when there's a quiet hiss. It takes a few more tips of the bottle to clean the wounds to Aziraphale's satisfaction, which is long enough for the strange tension over the whole situation to gradually break into a quiet sort of acceptance.
It's not exactly the first time I've injured myself in the night, or woken up to something bruised or bleeding.
Crowley looks embarrassed. Aziraphale doesn't know why. It's not as if he can do anything about it if it all happens when he's sleeping.
It never wakes you up? Aziraphale asks curiously.
You'd think it would,
Crowley grumbles.
But no, I never feel it till the morning. Well, there was one time I tied myself to the bed frame and nearly took my foot off at the ankle getting out of bed. That one definitely woke me up. Well, it was more the crashing face first into a chest of drawers that did the waking.
Aziraphale stops dabbing to offer a shocked look.
Good lord, were you all right?
Crowley nods. Yeah, I had a pretty bad sprain from it, and a few colorful bruises. I shifted the bed 3 feet as well. But I was fine in a few days.
I'm very glad to hear that.
Aziraphale does one last pass to make sure the injured area is clean, then pats it dry before using the small bandage on it.
It doesn't look too bad. I think the shards of muck went in and then popped out again. They've left you a few nasty cuts, but they've mostly stopped bleeding. I think if you keep them clean and dry for a few days, then they'll heal up just fine.
Socks, then, Crowley says, with a nod towards where his foot is still held in Aziraphale's hand. Which I do own, I promise. I'll have to take them off at night, though. The wood floors in here get a bit treacherous otherwise, especially for me.
Aziraphale very nearly says something about the fact that his flat is all carpets, and Crowley is more than welcome to stay with him for a while. Before he tells himself not to be silly, they are still basically strangers. He collects the tissues together and wraps a hand round Crowley's ankle to move it.
Right, shit, sorry. Didn't mean to use you as a footrest.
That's quite all right. If you give me a moment, I'll put the support bandage on it too. It probably doesn't need it, but Xerophil has had so few opportunities to take care of anyone, and he finds he's enjoying the chance to fuss a little. Crowley doesn't seem to mind. There's a curious patience to his expression, and maybe a touch of amused indulgence. Xerophil scrunches the elasticated tube between his hands. Luckily, it is a leg one, possibly left over from when Crowley said he'd sprained his ankle. He never mentioned when that had happened. This isn't really what they are meant for, but it might keep the wounds closed and dry for a bit. I don't know if you're going back to bed. He stops. That seems a bit personal. But Crowley is already eyeing the clock that now says 4:10, one hand rubbing at his rumpled hair. Don't know if I could get to sleep again, to be honest. Almost doesn't seem worth the bother.
I didn't find any paracetamol in the cupboard, Xerophil says apologetically. I wanted to bring you some.
Crowley shakes his head. Painkillers don't really do anything for me, so I don't tend to bother.
They look at each other for an awkward moment, and then Crowley is slowly, almost reluctantly, pulling his foot out of Xerophil's lap.
Thanks, and sorry again about the disturbance, and your trousers. I'll try and...
He stops and sighs.
I've never had much luck getting it to stop, to be honest. I have tried.
It's really no bother, Xerophil reassures him, which is nothing but the truth. Often awake, and unexpected company is, well, I suppose it's not intentional, but it prods me out of my own thoughts. I don't mind, really.
Crowley looks surprised, and his hazel eyes are really very striking. Xerophil doesn't know why he always covers them. He finds that he's smiling up at the man, and perhaps it's a hair past polite and friendly. He chides himself for it, since he is, after all, still attempting to provide medical assistance in a stranger's bedroom at 4 a.m.
Anyway, I mustn't keep you.
He pushes himself to his feet while Crowley makes something like a protesting noise in the back of his throat. I could make you a coffee or something, he offers. As a thank you. Xerophil doesn't like the thought of watching Crowley hobble around on his injured foot, certainly not on his account, but he can't pretend that the idea of being invited in to stay, to sit with Crowley for a while and fall into conversation over hot drinks, isn't appealing. He thinks that the man could use some rest off his feet for a bit, though. He hopes that perhaps they could introduce themselves properly, maybe some other time. He would like that rather a lot. He finds himself backing up with a handful of packaging and old tissues, as if he might take them home with him. He hurriedly leans to put them in the bin.
No, no, I won't trouble you any further.
For a second, Crowley almost looks disappointed, but then he's nodding, like Xerophil has made a good point. Sure, it's late. I mean, early. Thanks for the help, and the food. Just, it's really good of you. And sorry, again. Crowley looks like he can't decide whether to wince or laugh. And Xerophil can't help but find him worryingly endearing. It was so much easier when he was simply the intimidating and abrasive neighbor that he found incredibly attractive. Crowley awake may be a far more dangerous thing than he was prepared for.
My door is always open,
Xerophil says with a laugh. He thinks that was an attempt at a joke, he hadn't intended it to be.
He has no idea where it came from. He'd be more embarrassed about it, but it makes Crowley smile. Oh, and he has a very good smile. A crooked thing that spreads to every part of his face. Aziraphale bumps into the doorframe, trying to back out of the room, and decides that's quite enough embarrassment for the morning. He slips his way out of Crowley's flat and pulls the door shut behind him. And if he's wearing a ridiculously large smile on his way back to the safety of his own flat, well, there's no one around to see it.